Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films Untouchable, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, and possibly selected for the weather, Cold War. Hi, David. How are you?
Okay, Jill. I'm doing all right. How are you doing today?
There was no film called Hot War, right?
No, not this week, at least. No,
no choice. Okay.
Where I would have selected it to review simply to counteract the incredible low temperatures outside. But hey, at least we can maybe warm ourselves up by leaping among three different, totally different kinds of films, because that they really are. But they're all out and about right now, and they're all worth talking about in different ways. Start off with Untouchable. This is our documentary for the week, and it's a very interesting documentary because it deals with a subject of importance in a way that subject is not generally dealt with in popular discourse. Untouchable is a movie about child abuse, about child molesters, about pedophilia particularly. And what's very interesting about it, by the way, it was directed by David Feige, and what's interesting about it is that it is not just sort of a knee-jerk alarmist tract about pedophilia and pedophiles and sexual abuse. It is really quite an interestingly balanced movie, and it's not balanced in that it has nice things to say about pedophilia, but what it talks about is the way that the law approaches pedophilia and a lot of the tremendous excesses that go on in that department. It takes the point of view, which I think is vastly underrepresented in the way that most people commonly think about this issue. It takes the point of view that people who are pedophiles are themselves suffering from a terrible condition, which puts them not only in the position of often having, tremendously overpowering urges to do things that are terribly socially unacceptable and rightly so, but puts them in terrible legal jeopardy because they are treated when apprehended only as criminals and not as people who are also suffering from mental illness. And they are, in fact, the latter. They are, in fact, suffering from mental illness, at least the kind of people who are dealt with in this movie are. And we see how the law just does not make this distinction at all in all too many cases. So not surprisingly, the movie deals into quite a number of actual case histories. This is a documentary. It is a nonfiction movie. And it shows us quite a number of cases. And the kinds of legal travails that take place and criminal justice system travails that take place all too often in all different kinds of areas of crime and punishment. There, for example, is the case of a man who at one point was out of jail after serving a sentence and then is 8 minutes late. I repeat that, 8 minutes late for an appointment with his probation officer and goes back to jail for 4 years. And he was 8 minutes late for reasons he could not control. So, you have things like that which pop up in the movie. You have a woman who sets herself up with something that she calls a predator patrol. She drives around neighborhoods showing the neighborhood kids playing in the street the photos of a pedophile who lives near them so that they can avoid that person, but also, of course, so they can torment that person. This kind of thing goes on. We have quite a lot of analysis of laws that control where people who are on sex offender registries, and that, by the way, is a big theme of the movie, the idea of the sex offenders registry, and how this can go on long, long, long after a person has paid all kinds of other penalties for criminal behavior in this area. How people on sex offenders registries, there are all kinds of restrictions on where they can live, which sometimes result in the fact that there's almost no place they can live, and they end up living on the street, which, of course, makes them even more miserable than they already are and possibly makes them even more dangerous than they already are. And one character who recurs a number of times in the film, character, a real person, is a guy down in Miami, Florida named Ron Book, who is his daughter, Lauren Book, was abused by a nanny that they had, and what she went through was pretty horrifying. This nanny was clearly a really crazy person. But she abused Ron Book's daughter, Lauren Book. And this outraged and enraged Ron Book to the point where he became an enormously important lobbyist and politician who has devoted his life to persecuting pedophiles, who, I repeat, are also, in altogether too many cases, victims themselves of mental illness. And Ron Book is a fascinating character because he is full of rage. There's a moment in the film where you see him tying his necktie in the morning, and he ties his tie in an outraged way. It's really quite remarkable. He is so full of rage that even his daughter, who has now grown up and is herself an anti-pedophile activist, she regards her father as going way too far in all of this stuff. So it's a movie full of interesting cameos and interesting portraits of people, and I just found it very, very watchable. But mainly it just conveys this message. You don't have to have anything nice to say about pedophiles or pedophilia. You can see them as blights on society and all of that and still recognize that people who get involved in this aspect of human behavior are themselves suffering from a mental debility and deserve, I'm not saying that they deserve mercy necessarily. Well, they do deserve mercy in a whole lot of cases, but they deserve understanding, so much more understanding than we're apt to give them with our sort of knee-jerk responses to this sort of thing. And I salute the movie Untouchable for taking a balanced view of this subject and delving into it in ways that reveal different sides of the picture. It's a very interesting documentary and well worth seeking out. So now, dizzyingly moving to a movie at the total opposite end of the cinematic spectrum, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which is directed by no fewer than three talented people, Bob Persichetti, Peter Ramsey, and Rodney Rothman. And this is an animation. And I must say one thing about Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, and of course this is, you know, the umpteenth Spider-Man movie to come along, but one thing about it is that it is getting ecstatic reviews. Rarely do movies get such fabulously positive reviews as Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse has received, and that's very nice. I must say, I'm not ecstatic about it. It is an extraordinarily visually bubbly, perky, effervescent movie to watch. It reminded me in a lot of ways kind of cinema you sort of saw in the 60s sometimes, and back then it was known as psychedelic cinema. It has all kinds of visual effects just popping all over the screen. It is the latest in animation wizardry, because of course it is an animated feature, and by the way, it's nominated for the Academy Award now for Best Animated Feature of the past year. And it is truly spectacular to look at. What it doesn't have is anything going on that's even a teensy bit deeper than the fabulous animation effects. It is just one great big non-stop visual spectacle with pretty much nothing else going on. The conceit of the film is that we have a young main character, a young Hispanic teenager named Miles Morales, and he gets bitten by the proverbial radioactive spider, and he becomes a Spider-Man, but there's already a Spider-Man, so how can he also be Spider-Man? And then it turns out that there are lots of Spider-Mans, Spider-Men, Spider-Persons running around, and it turns out that they come from different dimensions, and that there's this gigantic gizmo which they have to sort of infiltrate in order to return to their respective proper universes. But that gizmo is controlled by an extremely evil person who is himself an important character in the movie, etc., etc., etc. So that's what it's about. It's about multiple Spider-Mens who are racing around and mostly cooperating with each other, and sometimes getting into conflicts with each other, and who's going to be able to get back to his or her own dimension, because of course nowadays Spider-Mans are not all Spider-Mans. Some of them, we have a Spider-Woman, we have a Spider-Pig, Spider, all different kinds of things, a lot of diversity in this movie. It's a very likable movie, it's a very amiable movie, and it has a wonderful voice cast, as films tend to do in this genre. Shameik Moore, Jake Johnson, Hallie Steinfeld, Mahershala Ali, Brian Todd Tyree Henry, Lily Tomlin. Boy, she hasn't been around a whole lot lately. Nicolas Cage, Liev Schreiber. So all of these fine people running around doing voices for this movie. And again, it's a truly spectacular film to look at. Back in the 60s, we would have said, smoke something illegal and then go see it. You'll enjoy it more. And maybe people are doing that even now. But I have to say, I found the whole thing after a while kind of tiring. All of that visual oomph and not a whole lot of mental oomph going into behind it. It's just a great big widescreen spectacle. And if that's what you want, you'll certainly get it here. See it on a great big screen. You'll probably enjoy it a lot. But again, I found it kind of tiring after a while. And so now once more, taking one more trip to a totally different area of the movies, Cold War. And here we have a movie which is now nominated for no fewer than 3 Academy Awards. I'm happy to say, because this is far and away the best of the movies I'm talking about this week. It's nominated for Best Foreign Language Movie of the Year. It's the director, Pavel Pawlikowski, is nominated for Best Director of the Year. And it's also nominated for Best Cinematography of the Year, Lukasz Zal, who did the extraordinary camera work of the film. Cold War is basically, it's a Polish movie. The official movies of its origin are Poland and the United Kingdom and France, because nowadays so many movies are international co-productions. But it's basically a Polish film with this very fine Polish director, Pavel Pawlikowski, being behind it, having directed it and co-written it. And his previous movie was a movie called Ida, about a young woman planning to become a nun, who then gets sidetracked by finding out things that relate to the Holocaust. That's a very, very fine movie, one of the best imports to American screens of recent years. And Cold War is also a very, very fine movie, a bit more expansive, a bit more ambitious than Ida was, equally worth watching, quite an extraordinary film. So what we have in Cold War is a movie that really does span quite a large number of years during the Cold War era. At the beginning of it, we have a movie that is sort of drenched in folk music. We have a folk music troupe, which is directed by a man named Victor. He's sort of the power behind it. He's the music director of it. And there's also a business director named Kosmarek, who's also an important character in the film. And they recruit a young woman. This is, again, a folk music troupe, and they do very ambitious shows for large audiences and so forth, but they're singing Polish folk music. And they recruit a young woman named Zula to be a new member of the troupe. She's a talented singer. She has a certain amount of charisma, and a love affair develops between her and Victor. And what happens then is that the movie moves forward in time through jumps, usually covering a few years, as the two characters get not a lot older, but somewhat older, and as the Cold War era unfolds, and they're moving through the Cold War era. So the movie is leaping forward in time every now and again, and the big thing that happens musically in the film is that they both get disassociated from the folk music troupe and from the folk music world. Zula becomes a popular singer, singing kind of smoky jazz pop kind of stuff. But her affair with Victor stays on, and then it's off, and then it's on. And also, we are moving through space a lot. We're moving from Eastern Europe over into Western Europe, and then ultimately back to Eastern Europe. As the two of them come together and split apart, they have other partners along the way. Again, their musical careers evolve in different ways, but they seem to always be coming back to each other, sometimes almost fortuitously and other times very deliberately. And of course, we have a lot of stuff with the authorities here, because this is the Cold War era, and you can't just go back and forth between Eastern and Western Europe however you want to. You can't even go back and forth between East and West Berlin, East and West Germany, any way you want to. So all of that is involved in it as well. One of the fine things about Cold War is the cinematography, and again, it is nominated for the Academy Award for Best Cinematography. Pawlikowski has a very interesting style, which was also present in Ida, and it's very much there in Cold War, where he uses a narrow aspect ratio, which is to say this is not a widescreen movie, very deliberately shot in an old-fashioned, more or less square screen manner, but there's more of the vertical dimension than we normally have in the framing of conventional films. So you see sort of more over the characters' heads, which is a way of relating the characters more intimately to the different environments they move through as the movie movie goes along. And it also just sheds a sort of a fresh perspective on things. This is a movie that doesn't look the way most movies look nowadays, and that itself is kind of exciting. And the soundtrack is just extraordinary, with magnificent folk music and really excellent jazz and pop going on at different times in the film. So it's a wonderful movie to look at, a wonderful movie to listen to. It's also a wonderfully acted movie and a very, very involving love story. So here we have a movie with real substance, a love story, which is also a political story, which is also a geopolitical story, but it's involving on a human level all the way through. One of the best films I've seen in quite a long while, and I highly recommend anything recently by Pavel Pavlikovsky, including his last movie, Ida, but Cold War is definitely something to seek out. It's a really, really good picture, and we don't have enough excellent foreign movies that make it to screens in America, and I'm delighted to welcome this one here. So that is my extremely globe-hopping and genre-hopping movie this week. A story this week, Jill.
Not only that, it's glowing. There's a glowing review in there. Absolutely glowing.
Well, that'll warm us up a little bit, maybe.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, David Sterrett. Films in Focus, the films Untouchable, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, and Cold War.